This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. For a while, writer William Connescue was experiencing double vision. Literally, he saw a blur, like an image that was splitting. He's okay now. He got surgery to fix it, but he liked the idea of double vision as a metaphor. To him, it aligned with the anxiety of aging. So it's a big part of his latest novel. William Connescue has written a new book called Carol Was Here and is here to talk about it now. William, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
In a way, like your last book being written, this is a book about absence. It's about a character who is not bodily present in the book.
Yeah. My first novel, there's a lot of anxiety about this character who's being written and aware of the author, and he's thinking about the author and imagining what the author is thinking, and the author is absent. And here we have Kara, this character who's this sort of life of the party actress who from North Carolina, who moved to New York to make it and didn't, and she's died before the book opens, and a lot of the book revolves around her and the people she left behind.
And the memory of of her in the minds of those left behind.
Exactly. She's very present as this ghost or memory or something in between.
Tell us about the characters who bring her to the book.
Yeah. So it starts with Brad. So you mentioned the double vision experience. So I had that experience. And it's not that I felt, woe is me. I must write about my ordeal. But it did feel, as you said, it felt like it had this literary potential for a character who is looking forward and looking back at possible futures and roads not taken. And so we have this man who was an actor in college, and now he works in real estate, and his ex-girlfriend has died, and he's having this vision problem, and he's not talking about it yet, and he's thinking, oh, there's a lot of what ifs. You know, what if he and Kara had stayed together? Would she have died? What if he had moved to New York to make it as an actor too? Would, you know, where would he be? You know, and he's having a lot of anxiety about where he is, and then this vision and the medical questions surrounding it are contributing to that anxiety.
Will you read for us?
Sure. Yeah. So this actually is early in the novel. This is Brad's perspective, and he's en route from Chapel Hill to the North Carolina coast where the funeral is going to take place. It was with a guilty sense of relief that he had left his wife behind. She was 11 weeks into a difficult pregnancy, and her fear of another miscarriage was making every cramp that much more painful. So Brad discouraged Val from even trying to get a substitute for her class. She'd never even met Kara. He was fine going by himself, he told her. And in truth, he preferred having this chance to say goodbye alone. Oh, it'll be fabulous, he could hear Kara saying. You can light candles and prop up my corpse. We'll have a grand old time. In death, she was probably still chain-smoking. Brad and Kara had been one of those college couples that seemed destined to stay together forever. When she moved to New York, there were resolutions to make it work, to visit each other every month or two, to talk daily or almost daily or soon. After there weren't any more resolutions, there were still phone calls for a little while, then a few quiet years of birthday text messages and holiday cards, until those two unsettling phone messages that Brad left unanswered. Then there was silence. The silence made this drive a little worse. The silence and the twin exit signs announcing his arrival in Greenwood Park.
William Connescue reading from his latest novel, Kara Was Here. It's interesting because just before that, Brad is speculating on or remembering the fact that he had anticipated this call, that he somehow knew or should have known that he would someday get a call about this early death for his former girlfriend. And again, you're sort of playing with what goes on in the mind, the anticipation of the world that isn't there, the memory of a world that is gone, and the illusion of it all, which I think is beautifully captured in the metaphor of double vision. Anybody who's ever had that has been dazzled by the fact that you can trick your brain to seeing two things precisely as they are when you know there's only one.
Yeah, it's, and there's this guilt, survivor's guilt. And I think, one of the things I'm obviously dealing with in the book is sort of how we remember and deal with the people we've lost and the people we used to be. And so, and that's often, intermingled because, a lot of the people, the people you lose are part of your past and part of who you were and a version of yourself that is
in a version of yourself. I was going to say Brad lost the self or is able to reflect on the self he might have been had he pursued acting.
Yeah. And so, and then there's also Kara's college best friend, Margot, is another one of the main characters. And so she has lost her friend and feels, you know, she lived in New York, as did Kara. And so should she have seen it coming? How, you know, there's a mystery at play here, too, about, you know, the book opens at Kara's funeral, and the sort of roommate du jour who shows up introduces himself as Kara's fiance. And that's really very unsettling for, you know, Brad, who thinks this is who she ended up with, and for Margot, who thinks, I don't know that I believe this. And so what really happened? And so then some questions about how she died and what her last year was like start to surface.
As you approach this book, as you began to write, what did this book appear to you to be a murder mystery, a ghost story, or was it about all the sort of the tricks of the mind and what goes on up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think, you know, for me, it has all of those elements. I mean, it's. I mean, I think of it as a character story, but it is sort of a ghost story of a type. You know, it's not like an Edgar Allan Poe ghost story. It is a mystery. I mean, I like a book to have an element of suspense through it, and an element of humor. So those were important to me. But I think it's really about, you know, about the characters and about complicated relationships and questions of identity. You know, for Brad, for Kara, and then the third main character is Gwen, who is Kara's 18-year-old sister. You know, Kara and the others are 34, 35. Gwen is 18, and so she is the age they were when they all became friends in college. She's sort of coming of age. She's very lost because she's lost her sister, and she's sort of taking some dangerous steps into Kara's life. So I thought, sister relationships, friend relationships, long-distance relationships. These are some of the things I wanted to explore.
How does her death cause them to reconsider each of their own lives, would you say?
Yeah. I think for each of them, you know, she was a primary – well, for Margot and Gwen, she was a primary confidant. And so her absence feels very present. For Brad, she's sort of the road not taken. And he's also in a place where his marriage is in a little bit of a limbo state. You know, he has a good marriage, but as I mentioned in the reading right now, his wife is pregnant and extremely nervous, and so, you know, he starts to not share things with her about his health problems, and then he starts isolating himself, and then there's this Kara's ghost or the memory of her who feels very present for him, and so. She sort of comes back to life, and he starts reliving his past and reliving a possible future.
Did you have to map out Kara's whole life to make her present in this book in her absence?
Yeah. I mean, at first it was more organic, and I started sort of just writing. I mean, I did start writing this book with the first chapter, a version of it. But yeah, as time grew on, sort of I would drop in memories of her, and, you know, and I'd think, how else do I want to show this kind of person that Kara is? Oh, well, let's have another anecdote about her. Let's have another memory that reinforces this. So I do then have a map of sort of, you know, a timeline of, you know, what some key things were.
That leads to exciting possibilities, but it's also scary. I mean, did you ever write yourself into a dead end? You thought, well, this is perfect for now. It'll help Brad, and it'll help develop his sort of regret or possible regret over not having pursued acting. Oh, no, if she did that, this really messes things up for Margot.
Well, I did have certain things had to move.
Yeah,
certain things had to move around in time. And, you know, early days, you know, the chapters were arranged a little bit differently. And I remember that being one of the things I suffered over, is sort of chronology. And
yeah. You've got to have an actual historian working next to you to archive the history of Kara. What about her surprised you when you finished writing the book about Kara in particular?
What about her surprised me? I mean, she's, you know, I think throughout it all, she's very lovable and impossible, you know, and she's, you know, I continue to understand why all the characters are so drawn to her. She's very irresponsible and, you know, and not 100% kind, you know, and yet they love her so much. And so I hope that that is conveyed through it all. And so, you know, as I would write, you know, even as I invented / discovered these episodes of, you know, great kindness and great difficult moments with her, you know, I continue to sort of think back and forth about that and hope that comes across.
When you started the book, was it about her? Was it about the other three characters? Was it about the four of them? I'm trying to get the sense of balance in your mind as the book, in terms of the centrality of these characters, as the book began for you.
So as the book began, Brad and his vision problem was a central force, and Kara, Margot, because she drives a lot of the mystery, Gwen was elevated as a character, and Kara herself became bigger and bigger in terms of her presence in the book as it advanced.
What about this business of present by absence attracts you? This is your second time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, to think about, to draw a character who exists in the mind of others, you know, and so I guess that's part of it. And, you know, and we're so influenced by people who aren't here or by people we, you know, imagine or remember. So I guess that was interesting to me.
In writing a book like this, it seems to me that you must have contemplated just that, how much of what we know about people is our own projection onto them, how much of what we know about the world. I mean, again, you do this trick, you make double vision, you think, oh, my goodness, all that happens in my head. Who knows what's really out there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever find this moment in the middle of writing this book where you think, well, none of it's real. What am I doing here? Why write this book?
I know, writing is a funny experience, and you make discoveries along the way, and so sure. It was a good experience. I'm a start and stop kind of writer, though. I will write up to a point and then stop for a few months and then come back to it. I mean, the well-behaved writer would say I wake up at the crack of dawn and write every morning, and I'm not that guy, but I do. But it does give me some perspective because I can come back to the book and say, oh, well, what, you know, how does it look to me a couple of months later?
Several of your characters are artists. Gwen is a painter, Kara an actress, Brad as well, at least at one time. Is there something about that? Does art play a role, a key role in the book for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I realized actually between my two books is, you know, here we have characters in their mid-30s who were, you know, artistically inclined in their early days, and then Gwen, who was 18. And in my first book, I had sort of artsy people in their mid-20s and early 30s. So I kind of bookend that now. And I guess that sort of interests me, is sort of what people who are interested in the arts or successful or talented in their teens and college years, what they do later. So that's, you know, we certainly explore that because Kara and Brad took opposing routes there. And that interests me just in terms of, you know, my own social circle and my own circumstances. And, you know, and it's, you know, there are all sorts of opportunities and situations come up that you don't contemplate when you're 19.
Well, one of your circumstances is that you are able to write and write successfully and be published. Is it one of the things you imagine? What if I were not able to write the way I want to and be published? Is that a sort of, you wake up fearing, oh, I'll never be able to write the next book?
Well, sure. I think it's hard, you know, to know. You know, to know what's going to be next and to know what the world holds for you. And it's a very, you know, competitive business. But I've been, you know, lucky that I've been able to balance that with other aspects of life. And now it's fatherhood. And, you know, I worked for many years at Duke in the fundraising office and in communications there.
A lot of creative writing and fundraising.
A lot of creative writing, exactly. Yeah. So that was a different kind of of writing experience, but that was good.
Well, are you interested in jumping across genres? These are two novels now that you've written. Are you looking at poetry, nonfiction?
I think I'll probably stay in fiction, and I've been playing with something that's a little bit more humorous now. So we'll see where that goes. But I mostly think in fiction,
and experimental fiction.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably, you know, I don't know, less experimental than the first. I mean, I wanted in this book to tap into, I guess I would say my first book, I sort of did what I wanted to do in metafiction, and that my thesis director at NC State's MFA program, Wilton Barnhart, would say sort of, you know, do everything you want to do, you know, don't save anything. So I felt like, you know, I had all the fun I could think of. And if I wrote metafiction again, it would have to be very different. So here I wanted to write a more, you know, linear narrative that sort of taps into a lot of universal feelings and relationships. And so, but the ghost was my sort of bit of experimentation and play. So we'll see what comes next.
Metafiction, what do you mean?
Oh, metafiction. That's fiction writing about writing. So a book that acknowledges that it's a book. So my first book, you know, the character knows that he's being written into a book. And so that's what makes it metafiction.
In some ways, wouldn't you say a lot of modern and if you want to call it, say postmodern fiction as well, is a kind of metafiction in that it's a meditation on consciousness itself. And that's what you do. So you're a reader and you're reading this and I'm creating images in your mind. And that's when the fun begins.
Exactly. And the acknowledgement of that. So here, you know, it's a different you know, it's not about the book, but it is about memory and, you know, and there's certainly the ghost memory imagination line that I'm writing in this book.
So what's next?
What's next? You know, fatherhood, but also, yeah, and then we'll see what comes. You know, I'm in sort of early days of playing around with what's next.
Well, when you get it finished, please bring it back.
Thank you so much.
William Conescu, the author of Kara, was here. He's going to be reading tonight at 5 o'clock. At the Country Bookshop in Southern Pines. And today is Bryson Russell's last day. Bryson is our intern. He has been with us several months. He is a fellow chef. He knows about cooking, and he knows an awful lot about producing The State of Things. We are going to miss him deeply, wish him the best in everything he does. And as we tell all our interns, we never close. Bryson, please come back. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things, our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Bryson Russell is our intern, Robin Copley's the technical director, Brent Wolf is our news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.